Okay. Welcome to the regularly scheduled August 23rd meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met previously in closed session and discussed a conference with real property negotiator regarding the Avila property, and direction was given to staff and personnel items, status of negotiations with Management Educators Council and San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, and direction was given to staff. We were not able, due to time constraints, to discuss item A under closed session, process for evaluating the superintendent, and that will be the first item on the closed session of the next board meeting. The board is now in open session. Do we have consensus on the order of business? Okay, then seeing that we do, we move to approval of the minutes. Mrs. Dickinson.
I have a lot of wires here. Is this on? It's on. I have an amendment to page 4, number 5. I made it as brief as possible, and I'd like it to read paragraph 1. Mrs. Dickinson opened the discussion with an interest in having a full dialogue. This is regarding the mission statement. She was concerned that the current mission statement does not recognize the necessity to teach students about their role in an interdependent world. Although there was some positive response from the board, in general, the board did not wish to lose momentum toward the upcoming strategic planning to fully involve the community in looking at the mission statement. And paragraph 4, Mrs. Dickinson indicated her interest in pursuing two specific changes as a compromise: self-sufficient to self-reliant, and guarantees to seeks to provide. Mrs. Andreen expressed support. Mrs. Dickinson will suggest this as a future agenda item. And then page 7, number 7. I thought it was a little confusing the way my question was worded that I had asked Mr. Robinette. So I'd like sentence 2 in page 7, number 7, to read, she asked the status of teachers who had their assignments reduced and whether they approved the change.
Okay, Mrs. Dickinson, with regard to the comments that you wanted submitted on the mission statement, do you believe that what Mrs. Holmes, that her minutes taken as secretary are factually incorrect?
I do, because, and I think she does a superb job, but I want to say, you know, having a daughter who's done research, and all of us do, that minutes are historical documents, and people sometimes look at them, and the way it was characterized was that what I considered the default compromise position was written in as the beginning goal, and those two specific changes were not, you know, what I really submitted at the beginning. So the way it's worded here, it brings those out right at the beginning, and I think they're better at the end, which is how it actually happened. Does that make sense?
Mr. Millar.
Minutes are memorializations of a discussion, event, conversation. They can range everywhere from a verbatim transcription to a paraphrase, and I believe it's been the board's practice way before I started that what the paraphrase, our minutes would attempt to paraphrase a more complicated discussion and provide a sense of the discussion that took place. Having said that, I don't have any problem with Mrs. Dickinson's remarks, even though I guess I'm more comfortable with the changes additions that she would like to make where they deal with your perceptions of things and what you said. I'm less comfortable when you are trying to change what other members of the board may have said or other people who are speaking said. But I think the easiest way to accommodate it is just to have the minutes reflect your proposed amendments or additions to the minutes, and we'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
Mrs. Andreen.
I just want to be sure that I understood what you said. Do you want today's minutes to show that correction, or are you exceeding in the previous minutes being changed? Because I think that'll be important when we get to the motion so we all know what we're voting on. I'm not sure I understood what you meant.
I'm not sure that I had thought it through that far. I guess it would be more satisfying if it were an amendment to the minutes of the last meeting, but, you know, I don't know.
Isn't that what's being asked for, is an amendment to the minutes of the last meeting?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to reluctantly concur, but I also want to say that I didn't think Mrs. Holmes' summary was misleading, and I think there's a danger in having everybody come back and add a lot of detail to the minutes so that their particular nuances are there, because it just can get out of control when people start doing it. But I don't have a problem with it this time, because you feel that it's clearer about what you were thinking. But I think where possible, we should, unless they're misleading, I think we should probably not make a paragraph that's essentially accurate into three paragraphs just to have the detail. That's in general. But I'll go along with it if you want to move it.
Well, I just wanted, can I say one thing? This isn't really, I thought what I read was quite short, actually. It's not three paragraphs, it's three sentences. But I'm willing to, compromise with you, Walter. If we want to just change the first sentence and leave the second sentence and third sentence in that first paragraph the way it was written, that's okay with me. And I can just change this part, which I do think inaccurately characterizes what I was trying to express. So we could change it to just where, instead of saying, Mrs. Dickinson opened the discussion with an interest in having a full dialogue, suggesting two specific changes in the statement, changing self-sufficient to self-reliant and guaranteed to strives to. We could just change that part to, Mrs. Dickinson opened the discussion with an interest in having a full dialogue, which that part's pretty much the same. She was concerned that the current mission statement does not recognize the necessity to teach students about their role in an interdependent world. And then you could leave the rest of that paragraph the way it is. And then in paragraph 4, put in that part about the specific change. I think that when you say do not modify the overall statement, I think that's sort of misleading the way it's written in the, because I think it does modify it. That's the whole point. But it's a very narrow focus. So I think this is more clear on paragraph 4. Mrs. Dickinson indicated her interest in pursuing two specific changes as a compromise, self-sufficient to self-reliant, and guarantees to seeks to provide. I mean, that's exactly what is being proposed. Okay. And she will suggest this as a future agenda item. Because I think it is, I like the ability to clarify what I was trying to say, because maybe it wasn't communicated, and I think it's important not to change things that weren't under my purview. I think that's a good point.
Mr. Unger.
Yeah, I'm very reluctant to change the minutes, and I understand the idea of clarity. I do have to believe that the purpose for the secretary is to create the most factual minutes possible, and I'm very uncomfortable with board members making large changes to this. Yeah, I can't support doing the changes. I could support the change that the slight change that you talked about in paragraph 1. But overall, I'm with Mrs. Andreen that I'm very uncomfortable with board members starting to change what are the minutes, and or I'm just not comfortable with it.
Yeah, I also am uncomfortable with scripting the minutes, and I've never seen a problem with minutes that have been constructed by Mrs. Holmes, except when there is an occasional factual error, and that's brought to her attention, where something is, there's a typographical error or something is misstated or whatever. I am uncomfortable with wordsmithing the minutes.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Mrs. Baldwin.
Either way, it's not on. Is it on?
It's
I can yell. Oh, okay. Thank you. I'm suggestion, if Adrian, if you're willing to do it, simply we'll hold on this for now and call and get the tape, look at the tape, and write down pretty much what you said and bring it back the next meeting and we'll make the change.
I already checked it out.
Oh, you did? Mm-hmm. You already checked it out.
I did check it out. I think that the suggestion I'm making is just one sentence and is more accurate, and that's why I'm suggesting.
If you've already checked it out and you've done the research, I suggest that we go ahead and make the change. Thank you. Okay. I'm moving that we make the changes as suggested. She's done her homework.
Is there a second?
Second.
Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Nay.
Passes 4-2.
Moving on with it passed 5-2.
We don't have seven people here tonight, Walters.
Yeah, I did vote. I voted yes. But I want to just point out that my entire statement regarding the 2002 group review of the mission statement, goals, and objectives of the district, wherein much the same discussion was held with a very dedicated group of teachers, staff, parents, community members, decided not to change anything. Now, that's not in the minutes either, and I'm okay with that. The one thing that bothers me, though, is I did not feel discouraged by Dr. Valentine in any way, shape, or form when he suggested that we pay attention to the strategic plan. Thank you.
Okay. Correspondence. I see none. Moving on to public comment. We have not received, I don't believe, any request to address the board. Is there anyone here on non-agenda items? Is there anyone here who would like to address the board but didn't submit a form? Okay, then seeing none, we will move on to reports by school staff. And we don't yet have student representatives to the board for this academic year.
Madam Chair, if I could take the privilege on that, I just wanted to take a moment to introduce to the board and to the audience and to our viewing audience tonight our new Director of Curriculum Instruction. We're very pleased to welcome Damian Barnett to our family, and we won't... We won't presume upon him to give a speech, but Damian, welcome to our... Well, okay, Damian. No. Anyway, welcome to our family, and Damian.
Are there any other staff reports? Okay, then Mr. Miller, status of the state budget.
You know, at this time, there hasn't been very much in the activity surrounding the state budget. The emphasis, as we talked about in the previous meetings, has been about the initiatives. And the latest and really only new news about what's going on at the state level is that the governor and the legislature have agreed to do not compromise their relative positions about the Live Within Our Means Act, which would limit the amount of money that Prop 98 guarantees to school districts. And they're going to go out on the campaign trail, and they're going to campaign for their relative positions. The governor obviously wishes to pass Live Within Our Means, and the legislature, the education community, are going to oppose him on that. Each side has huge, huge amounts of money that they're going to throw at this issue. There are Republicans who have been heard to say they really don't care if it passes or fails. They want to make sure that the Democrats and the ed community spends their money so it's not available to defeat them at the next election. So there is now a move that shows that the Republicans aren't really that interested in Live Within Our Means as much as they're afraid of the money that the Democrats have raised in order to defeat it. And they're going to carry it to the limit so that the resources are depleted and can't be used against them at the next election. But this is the most interesting. If it wasn't so devastating, it would be extremely interesting to watch the playing of the nuances of the politics and the back and forth that occur within this these initiatives and the battle that's going on. It's monumental. It's almost redefines how politics will be played in California if they are successful with these kinds of things in the future. And we'll see what happens. But nothing new in terms of the state budget at this point.
Okay, thank you. The next item is a public hearing. Determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials. Dr. Matakovich.
Thank you, Madam President. As you are well aware, Ed Code Section 60-119 requires that each year you as a governing board determine that each pupil in each school in our district has or will have, by the end of this year, sufficient textbooks or instructional materials, or both, in each subject that are consistent with the content and cycles of the curriculum framework adopted by the State Board of Education. We are required to meet two program requirements. One, the Instructional Materials Alignment Program, and the other, the Williams Settlement. And actually, that's why we're coming to you at the beginning of this year, because the Williams Settlement has said we need to make this public notice at the very beginning of each school year. So if I may, the California Instructional Materials Funding Alliance Program requires that we have instructional materials adopted and aligned to the content standards in reading, language arts, math, history, social science, and science. Our district currently meets this sufficiency requirement for K-12 mathematics, K-12 reading, language arts, 7-12 history, social science, and 4-12 science. The district does not meet the sufficiency requirement in the following areas: K-6 history, social science, and K-3 science. We are in the process this year of following the cycle of the state, and we have in our plans to look at history, social science in this year and science in 06-07. Now, in following the Williams Settlement, school districts are required to provide state-adopted foreign language and health texts in all K-8 classrooms for all students enrolled in foreign language or health courses. In grades 9 through 12, school districts are now required to provide standards-based instructional materials consistent with the cycle in terms of adopting curriculum frameworks approved by the State Board of Education in foreign language and in health. And we are required to present a plan of sufficiency. The district currently meets a sufficiency requirement in 7-12 foreign language. The district does not meet the sufficiency requirement in K-12 health. With the newly state-adopted health framework, staff will be able to revise our health curriculum this year and recommend textbooks to you in this school year. We're also required under the Williams Settlement to supply sufficient quantities of science lab equipment for identified grades 9 through 12 lab courses, so each enrolled student has sufficient lab equipment available to use in class. We currently meet this sufficiency requirement in all of our 9 through 12 science labs, according to our science department chairs. Now, as far as fiscal impact, the fiscal impact for providing sufficient textbooks is substantial. We have a multi-year instructional materials plan, which takes into account these projected adoptions, and we determine what it will take to purchase the materials, the textbooks, and we set our priorities to purchase textbooks. We see that funding will be needed to meet sufficiency requirements in the K-12 health program, so we will be looking at presenting a plan that will get us to sufficiency in these areas. Tonight, no board action is required. This public hearing is provided for public testimony for the determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials.
Thank you. Is there any, before we open it to the public? Go ahead, Mr. Miller.
Thank you. I just had a question. The first paragraph on page 3.1 of board item 3, it references the end of the fiscal year we either have to certify each pupil has curriculum or has textbooks and materials, or they have to by the end of the fiscal year. What's our fiscal year we're referencing there?
This current fiscal year.
I know, but what kind of fiscal year are we on?
July 1 to June 30th.
I thought that was the answer, but I don't trust my memory anymore, and I thought there might be somebody else out there who might wonder the same thing. Thank you. That Caroline doesn't trust my memory either. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any member of the public who wishes to speak to this? Seeing none then, and no board action is required, we will move on. And after the fact, I will open the public hearing. Is there anyone wishing to speak to this? Seeing none, then I'll close the public hearing. And we will still move on. Okay. Item 4 is a resolution, or a proposed resolution. Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Miller has kind of framed for us the battle lines that are drawing around Proposition 76 of the Live Within Our Means Act. Part of the gathering coalition in opposition to that is California School Boards Association, who has developed a resolution to be considered by school boards, a resolution that would take a position in opposition to Proposition 76. At the request of a board member, we've brought this resolution forward and bring it to you for purposes of discussion and action if you wish.
Mrs. Andreen.
I would thank Mr. Unger for bringing this forward. And I have to say that I agree with Mr. Miller that this is really a trend that I don't like, that looks like it's just aimed at making CTA spend a lot of money, when you think that the various things that were so important for reform were merit pay, paycheck protection, longer to achieve tenure, and this. They're all targeted at CTA and making them spend inordinate amounts of money on these issues. And I think that it would be good for us to support these efforts. I would like to see us, if we adopt this, also send it to the Tribune care of Jeff Ballinger.
Mrs. Botwin.
I like this very much, Chris, and I thank you for this. Did you write this?
CSBA helped.
Okay. I'd like to add a little postscript there, though. After the final be it resolved, I'd like to add another one and say, and be it resolved, therefore, that we suggest the money raised in order to combat this resolution be attributed or equally divided among all the schools. I think that would do us up brown. Thank you.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I support this resolution. I think what bothers me the most is that it's a proposition to undo Proposition 98. And I never have liked the propositions and referendum process for governing, but now I guess we're going to have dueling propositions. I think the public was well-informed, made an intelligent decision, made a clear statement in Proposition 98 where education fits in and the priorities of spending in our state. And this is an in-run around the good judgment of the people at that time, and I think it is fraught with appeals to the worst in us as members of the electorate. And I'm sorry to see it coming to this, but I do support the resolution.
Mrs. Dickinson.
Does someone want to read the resolution? It's not long, and I love it, too. And I'm so happy that Mr. Unger is adopting it.
Yeah, any one of us can read it. I was prepared to read it, or Chris, if you'd like, that would be fine.
No.
If I may, have the honor of reading it?
I'd be delighted.
This is resolution number 010506, opposition to Proposition 76, the so-called California Live Within Our Means Act.
Whereas California's 6 million students deserve high-quality schools with well-trained educators, small class sizes, quality educational material, instructional materials, up-to-date textbooks, and dynamic parent support, and whereas the California Live Within Our Means Act, Proposition 76, would upset the balance of power between the governor and the legislature by giving the governor the power to both create and declare a fiscal emergency and then to take unilateral budget actions. And whereas these actions include multiple mid-year across-the-board cuts for all programs, including education, thus violating the constitutional priority given to K-12 by the voters of California and placing K-12 funding at the mercy of the politics of the moment. And whereas Proposition 76 would also eliminate basic provisions and guarantees as provided by voters when they passed Proposition 98, including making the 2004-2005 reductions to school funding permanent rather than temporary, and eliminating the requirement to restore any reductions to the funding guarantee. And whereas Proposition 76 would seriously undermine the continuity and quality of instructional programs by exposing schools to unstable funding and the constant threat of mid-year cuts, making it impossible to plan and budget for ongoing spending commitments because of the possibility of spending increases one year and reductions the next. And whereas Proposition 76 would severely impact the base funding for schools, resulting in as much as $4 billion, $600 per student per year below the minimum funding base required by current law. And whereas, if Proposition 76 is approved, California would continue its downward spiral from ranking in the top 10 in per pupil funding to one of the lowest states in the nation. A recent Quality Counts 2005 report by Education Week ranks California 44th in the nation. And whereas California schools have already suffered $9.8 billion in cuts and deferrals in the last several years, resulting in school closures, increases in class sizes, layoffs of teachers and support staff, and a shameful shortage of librarians, counselors, nurses, custodians, and groundkeepers throughout the state. And whereas Proposition 76 breaks several promises made by Governor Schwarzenegger and the legislature to repay and restore minimum Proposition 98 base funding and settle up funds. And whereas San Luis Coastal Unified School District has suffered millions of dollars in cuts over the last several years. And whereas the California Live Within Our Means Act, Proposition 76, is unsound public policy and unfairly publishes schools and punishes schools and students and undermines the education funding protections voters say they want. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the San Luis Coastal Unified School District strongly opposes Proposition 76 on the November 8th special election ballot. And I would move that we pass and approve resolution number 010506.
Second.
Okay, moved by Mr. Unger, seconded by Mr. Millar, and you had a comment?
I just wanted to mention, since Patty brought up, you know, how teachers, CTA has to spend all this extra money. They're being assessed extra fees, each one, to help fight this. And they're already spending so much money on classrooms. I can't understand this teacher CTA as a special interest group. I mean, teachers are individuals who work hard and have a special interest in kids. And I know I personally bring drinking water in big jugs for my students and peanuts and shells for hungry kids. So we're not just providing materials. We're providing food and water and all kinds of things. And we have to spend money fighting this undermining of our educational program. I mean, it's really sad. So I love the resolution. I'm glad we're adopting it. I'm sure we will be.
Mr. Millar?
I just also want to add that the CSBA that was referred to earlier is the California School Boards Association, ACSA. I'm sure most of the employee bargaining units for classified employees are opposed to this. So there's an attempt to cast this as some sort of special interest battle, and I appreciate Adrian's remarks. There's a broad coalition in education opposing this proposition.
Okay,
This is a roll call vote, Mrs. Holmes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mrs. Dickinson?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mrs. Botwin?
Yes.
Mrs. Andreen?
Yes.
6-0.
Yes.
Does anyone else support that this should go to Jeff Ballinger? Great. And I wonder if it would be presumptuous of us to send it to the other districts as well, the other local districts. I think Lucy Amar might want to get on this bandwagon with their current problems. And I don't know if CSBA, did you get this at your request from CSBA, Chris, or did they send, how did
this,
you?
This was something that was CSBA delegates and other interested parties were notified of this. And this was a draft resolution that CSBA provided to us.
My question is really, I wonder if the other districts already have it in our county or whether it would be kind of a courtesy on our part to just give it to them in case they want to do the same thing we did.
I would suggest that we give it to them. The fact that one was notified of it, one had to do a little work in order to get it.
Okay.
And thanks to Dr. Valentine for that as well. So I would suggest that we do that, and I would also suggest that we send a copy of this to our local legislators, as well as to the California School Boards Association, notifying them of our opposition to Proposition 76.
Now, Patty, I had heard that Jeff was no longer doing our
beat. Education?
And I don't know who the person is. Now, that may
be misinformation.
He's doing
city and education, I think. I think they basically broadened his duties rather than took him away from education.
Okay.
But I know that they have someone else doing education in the South County. I think Jeff is still doing in the North. Yeah. I think he's still covering San Luis Coastal within his work for San Luis City. So he would pass it on, though, I think, if there's somebody else at the Tribune. So our interest, I guess, is just getting it to the Tribune, to the other districts in San Luis Obispo County, and to the legislators. Thank you.
Mr. Millar.
I just want to suggest that we do it pretty gently when we bring it to the attention of other districts because of the unique nature of ours.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, we're supporting them.
Good point, Walter. Okay, item 5 is draft contract with Shear Edge Development for the Avila property. Mr. Parker.
Good evening. Just to recap some history, the Board of Education had defined their goals to staff look at underutilized properties that the district might own and try and envision ways which we could turn them into ongoing revenue generators for the benefit of the students of the school district. To that end, we issued a request for qualifications from interested developers who are interested in the Avila property, which is 0.66 acres that we own in Avila Beach. After pre-qualifying the respondents to the RFQ, we issued a request for proposals, and ultimately the board directed us to enter negotiations with Shear Edge Development for contract negotiations for development of that. And our goal in this is to create a project which is compatible with the community, which creates ongoing revenue for the school district and to benefit students in the school district. And this project is essentially a land lease, a 99-year land lease. And if you'll permit me, I'll just discuss a few of the components, major components of the lease. Term, 99 years. Lease payments, once it's completely built out, the land lease payments, $116,379 the first year, with a 3% escalator each year compounding for the 99 years. Total of lease payments in excess of $66 million. Shear Edge Development will be responsible for obtaining all necessary permits. That's in dealing with the county planning department, local advisory departments, entirely on their responsibility to satisfy the community, and the community will have ample opportunity for input into the final disposition of the project through the normal processes of a developer and the community. The project consists of 14 residential units. 6 of the 14 units will be offered as long-term leasehold, quote, sales with prepaid rent, And three of those six would be affordable units and would be made available to San Luis Coastal qualified employees first before being made available to other members of the public. We are recommending that we share a performance completion bond 50-50 with SureEdge, and we expect that that won't exceed $50,000, and that will guarantee that the project is built to completion. Other than that, I'd be happy to listen to the board's discussion.
Madam Chair, I have some comments, but I'd sort of like to hear from the public first.
Right. Are there any members of the public who wish to address the board on this item? If you would come forward one at a time, we have a 3-minute limit. There's a 3-minute time limit, and the board will listen to your comments, but will not respond back to you.
I'd rather prefer that we hear the board's comments first, but I guess that isn't a possibility. I'm Ann Brown. I live in Avila, property owner, and I'm also on the Avila Beach Civic Association board. There are a number of us who are very concerned with this project, and the concerns revolve around I understand that you're just considering the lease at this time, but it seems as though this is moving in a very fast-track arrangement, and that the people in Avila have not had much of an opportunity to do what we need to do in terms of finding a site for the old school that's on the property. It has been changed, but there are historic parts of it that this town of Avila feels need to be preserved. And I think that this fast-track arrangement that's going on right now is going to make it very difficult for the Avila people to find a site to move the building to find the money. And so that's one of our concerns. Another concern has come up, and I don't know if it's in the lease or not or how it could be addressed, but there's a large concern among the residents who live on this street, and it is a residential street, that some of these units might be used for vacation rentals. And I think that you're probably aware that there's quite a bit of discussion now with the County Board of Supervisors in terms of Cayucas and Cambria. Pismo Beach is discussing that as well. You might know Ms. Andreen about your area out in Morbay, Cayucas area. So that is another issue, whether it could be addressed in terms of the lease, preventing this sort of rental stock. I'm not sure, but I would certainly be interested in your consideration of that matter. I think that pretty well sums up my concerns. It's the fast track is very concerning to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Mrs. Botwin.
May I ask a question to the administration relative to this? For example, Russell, how many months has it been since we started with the SureEdge? Has it been 19 months?
Yeah, it's in excess of 12 months.
Okay. Almost a year and a half, actually, that we've been in this process. Thank you.
Madam Chair, distinguished board members, staff, Tom Guernsey, Avila Beach Community Services District Facilities Committee member. I've been an elected official in Avila Beach for almost 11 years now, and the Community Services District never received any notification on the bidding process, so we could respond, or the foundation or other entities within the community could respond. As a matter of fact, I just received the phase one of the Bertrando report about 2 months ago, and then at AVAC's subcommittee meeting at the was around the first week of this month, received the phase two Bertrando part of the report on the structure and the grounds, and it's dated July the 5th. The county sat on it for a month before any community members had a chance to even look at it. We were told at that meeting that this project was put on fast track because the structure had little to no architectural significance for becoming a historical building. I'd like to share with you a piece of information that I just received from the county in regards to qualifications of people to do studies. Bertrando and Bertrando research consultants are qualified to do background evaluations, not qualified to do historic architectural evaluations. That's from the County Environmental Division of Resource Consultants list. I'm very concerned about the fate of the structure. So are members of the community. I think Ann Brown did an excellent job of echoing concerns of people of the community, and this has been put on fast track because of this report. There's members of the community who would like to challenge this report and have a second opinion. And any information I can give to you, Mary's husband Pete can get a hold of. You can get a hold of me through the Avila Beach Community Services District, and I'd be glad to work with you. And if there's other concerns, I'll let you know. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak this evening.
Thank you. Sir?
My name is Robert Martin. I'm a resident and property owner in Avila Beach. Indications have been from the meetings that we've been held with Shear Development that the building will probably be destroyed unless somebody steps forth and finds a place to put it, does the financing, does all of the moving and all the necessary things to get it relocated in another spot. This would take considerable time and effort on the part of any individual that takes that on. As I understand it, Shear Development is responsible for taking care of all these things, everything, as I read through the contract that I have. And it should be really up to them to either do the moving or an installation someplace else or leaving it on site. I'm for keeping the building as historical unit, and I wouldn't like to see it destroyed. I am a fourth generation member of my family that have lived in Avila. All my uncles and my dad, myself and my brother and cousins, we all went to the Avila Beach school, as well as the grocery. And my uncle owned the grocery store, Vincente Canet. And anyway, I'd like to say, as you probably know, the property was purchased in 1903, and it was purchased by funds from Port San Luis and the Avila residents, Avila Beach residents. It was not a part of the Bellevue Santa Fe School, either one of those two districts. It was the Avila Beach School District. So we're talking about just a small community that supported that school, and it's getting started. By the way, the initial price was $225 to buy the property in 1903. The school district has been bonded. The Avila Beach School District was bonded at various times in order to provide the pencils and the papers and for the students to use, and also to add some property to the school to make it this 66 acres we're talking about. In approximately the 65 years that it was in existence, it put out a lot of students on the street. It educated a lot of people. They went out into the community to become good working individuals. All over across the country and other communities, you can see where these little towns and places are preserving their schools. That seems to be quite the thing to do. It's a very historical aspect. I can't think of anything more historical than a building where all these people have gone to and have gotten their education to go out into the world. So why aren't we requiring that this be done? The basic structure of this building is still there. It was modified somewhat by the Unified School District in 1977 or something like that, when they turned it over to the Functional Living Group for lease. So the other thing I would like to talk about is the usage of the property. First, it was used as functional living.
Sir, I have to ask you to begin to wrap it up now because the three-minute buzzer has sounded.
Okay, well, we were promised at the time the school was given over to the Unified School District that it would be used as a place for a kindergarten if there was enough students for enrollment. There was no option was given at that time for it being used as a rental. The old schoolhouse should be preserved for the community of Avila Beach and not preserved for any one individual. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. John Salisbury, AVAC member, past chairman on the Avila subcommittee. And also, I've got a pretty close tie to that schoolhouse because I'm the one that my family bought the old Santa Fe schoolhouse and have reconverted it into a wine tasting room. And believe me, my building is a heck of a lot worse shape than that one in Avila. I did a complete study of it, went underneath it, looked at it. It's in really pretty good shape compared to what we just went through. So we would really want to see that there's time and effort to find a place for it in even Avila or somewhere in the valley that we can preserve this building. You know, we've been clobbered in Avila. We've lost our town. It got picked up and hauled over to Kettleman City. And, you know, we can't lose that many more buildings. I also saved the Ruta House, which is a 700-square-foot building that was on the old rock between the old Port Inn and the breakwater in the 1880s. And that was moved over to the over by the post office, and it was going to get torn down, so I gave my friend a buck for it, and we moved it over to the schoolhouse, too. So there's just not much left in town. And to lose the schoolhouse now would be just one more blow that we can't take. Also, I'm concerned, being a member of the subcommittee, we were told that this development was going to be for school teachers, and that was something very well needed. Obviously, they can't pay the big prices in town. We can't keep our good school teachers if they don't have a place to live. And so we made a lot of concessions as our subcommittee and some things we were required to do because it is a low-cost housing operation. Now to hear that there are only going to be three of them available and that potentially it could be vocation rentals or some other kind of rentals where the school teachers are not going to get it. And we're real concerned, too, of the few rooms that are available. Does Avila Beach school teachers get first crack at it, or somebody from North County or somewhere else get it? So it's a concern to us that this is not as was advertised. It's almost like a bait and switch compared to what we were told it was going to be. And so we're real concerned about that. So that's our feeling on it. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Botwin.
I just wanted to respond to, first of all, actually, to Bob. Is Carla here? Is Carla still here? I'm sorry? Okay. Because all the comments you're making are wonderful. I agree with them all. We'd love to save the old building. We'd love to find you guys to find a place for it and move it off, and I don't know about a dollar, maybe $2 or something. But the thing that bothered me, though, several of you used the word fast track. And about a year ago, we met over in Senshimer School, and we spent quite a bit of time and effort on going through this proposition, the sheer edge, the whole thing. The lock, stock, and barrel, there was much discussion. And I asked Carla, I had called her ahead of time, and I said, are you going to be here? Actually, I called the county commissioner at that time, and I said, who is the person I would contact to get to be here to give us their input? And she gave me Carla's name and number, or somebody else who referred me. Carla was there that night, and I asked her after we finished the discussion, what do you think, what do you feel, would you, you know, I think it's great, I think it's wonderful. She was all for it. Because I had some concerns. But again, back to the my statement of the use of the word fast track here, this has not been fast track. This has been a long time growing and going through changes and so on. And I don't know why you guys break down. Communication breaks down everywhere. I mean, it breaks down here at the board all the time and everywhere else. And I think there may have been some breakdown communications there. May I? He asked. Bob?
May I clarify?
Is that okay?
No, well, then we're getting into a dialogue. We can't really get into a dialogue.
I apologize, Bob. No, I didn't mean to get into a dialogue. That is not. I wanted to ask questions, and my question basically is, and I'm a little surprised with the use of the word fast track because it's been over a year, so I should shut my mouth and leave it there. And
if you clarify the term fast track,
I know we can't.
Can I help with that
yes,
part?
Yes, you may. Thank you.
And that's okay. The fast-track process that I think that the Avila residents are referring to involves the Planning Commission, and there is a series of steps that they go through for that. The school district, under no circumstances, has been involved in a very fast-tracked operation. It's been a long, arduous, frustrating process for us as staff in order to develop the basics of this agreement. In the very beginning, as Mrs. Botwin referred to, representatives from Avila were invited to participate. At one point, they were even going to participate in our discussions with Sheer Edge to make sure their interests were representative. But at the beginning of the conferences with Sheer Edge, they decided not to participate. Mr. Parker and I had gone to a meeting with the AVCO meeting and presented the project, and they were notified from the get-go about what was going on. Nothing has changed much. Such changes have been a result of the conversations we've had with Sheer Edge about what works best for everybody. The units were 18, now they're 14. The affordable units were always just about what they are. They did change a little bit, but that was a result of square feet and other issues that are part of the mathematical formula. So in terms of the fast track, it really is a planning department process, not a school district terminology.
Mr. Millar?
Well, I'm glad we clarified the fast-track thing because from the board's perspective, the only time I remember us putting any pressure on this process is that basically we wanted to know from our new superintendent, where were we on this? Let's get this moved along. One of the things that attracted me to this approach was having been in my first term closing elementary schools, laying off people. I was sick and tired of us not being in control of our own finances and our own fortunes. We're not in control now, but at least we're less out of control than we were. And part of it is strategies that we gave to our administration, Mr. Miller, Brad Parker, Superintendent Ladd before he left, and Dr. Valentine now, to help us with that. And there should be some satisfaction in knowing that this piece of property is going to provide general fund revenues for kids. We're going to educate a heck of a lot more kids than they ever educated at that site. And that's not to diminish its importance from a historical standpoint for the community. It's just to say that we're not suddenly embarking into a money-making operation. This board took, I thought, pretty gutsy action to try to use this small parcel that we cannot use for a school site, that we had an overhang of additional maintenance and upkeep responsibilities because we had a tenant in there, and we needed to do something. And I'm proud of what we've done and how it's worked out. I will say that there are lots of unresolved issues, and now that the board, assuming we approve the contract, That makes it a reality, and many of these issues that you all have brought up this evening become ripe, as we say in the law. In other words, you all can go at it, you can start to deal with it. Shear Edge and Mr. Edwards and his folks are going to have to figure out how to get the certifications and the completions and the compliances and the regulations, and you guys hold your feet to the fire, as will we, and will the county. I mean, they have no delusions about that. We've all heard of the Brown Act. We bristle under the restrictions of it and do our business in accordance with the Brown Act, but it's a two-way street. When a governmental agency such as ourselves takes action pursuant to the Brown Act and through our meetings and announcements and everything, there's a presumption that you folks in the public out there know what we're doing. And I'm sorry if in the legal sense that's constructive notice of what we're doing. In reality, it's actual notice is the most important part. And I'm sorry if some folks didn't get the word, but we didn't change anything. We didn't bait and switch, I assure you. That has a pretty powerful meaning, and I don't think it should be used without some serious thought to it. This project is moving a board goal, an important issue for us along, and will provide a revenue stream that will educate kids. And I'm hoping my name is on a plaque somewhere on that building as a board member who was involved in the project.
Mrs. Andreen.
Thank you. I think you have really recapped very well what our thinking was in going into this. And one thing that is frustrating for me is that I'm a former member of AVAC, and I know how the process works, and I know what some of the concerns are and have been about the school. But we're sitting here as a school board, and we are really not in a position to resolve these issues. They have to go through the land use process. They have to go through the advisory council, the planning commission, the county. And because of that, we didn't sit here in judgment of whether this was going to be a vacation rental or not. We put the onus for all of that on Shear Edge, because as school board members, that's the only sensible thing for us to do. Our job is to educate kids. Our job is to make sure that there is revenue to meet our obligations. And by doing this, we do ensure a $66 million revenue stream. And on that $250 investment, I just want to thank everybody that had anything to do with putting that property there, because I think this is a fantastic return to the public on that initial investment. I urge the community to continue working with Shear Edge. I know there are people who would like us to put things into the lease that would meet their particular desires of how this property be used, but I really think we would be way overstepping the bounds of a school board if we started making a vacation rental ordinance through our lease when the community doesn't even have one yet. Now, if the community does go that way, or if planning says they don't want vacation rentals there, that won't necessarily affect the agreement. The agreement allows that process to go forward. And if I thought that our agreement precluded a fair review at AVAC or precluded the county from doing its job in protecting the community, I wouldn't want to approve this agreement, but I think the way it's been written, it allows all those processes to go forward in the manner that county government anticipates they'll go forward, with noticed hearings, with all the AVAC people there. With all due respect to you folks, we don't know if all the rest of the people in AVAC, you know, feel the same way that you do right now. So we can't really do anything more than listen to your concerns and urge you to move them forward through the process and to work with the developers. And I hope that you do understand that our goal was to provide more affordable housing, but the way the project penciled out, this is as much as we were able to get with this developer. We didn't have people lined up to do this kind of development because it is difficult. And it has to pencil out in order to get somebody to do it. So I think our staff has done an incredible job. I think that there's been great cooperation on both sides. It has been a slow process from our perspective just to get this agreement negotiated in such a way that it moves forward. And when we decide on this tonight, it's really just that in a charter school that you don't have in a district school, but there are also trade-offs. And so when we make this housing available on a preferential basis to our district employees, I think that's really prudent for us to do because we do have to look ahead to our needs to recruit and retain employees. But I think the real reason we're doing this is because we'll have a revenue stream of $66 million for the district, and at the end of that 99 years, the property will still belong to the district, and then something else can be done with it. I wish you good luck with finding a way to save that schoolhouse. I would love to see it saved, but I don't think that we're the group that can make those decisions. We really don't. We don't have the expertise to do that, so I think this lease is good the way it is, and I move that we go forward.
Are you moving that we?
Well,
okay.
Mrs. Dickinson had a comment.
I'm afraid I was one of those citizens that Walter's referring to who didn't pay any attention to this project as a citizen of San Luis Obispo since I'm so busy doing the things I do. And I've only been on the board since I was elected in November. So as a fresh person looking at this project, I want to just share very briefly what I observe. And one thing is I observe that the board is very invested in it and they're confident about it. And so I want to have faith in their expertise on it and their thoroughness. What I also observe is I went out to the property. I went out there with two of my kids, and my son's wife went with us and walked around on it. I don't think anyone should ever make decisions about property if they haven't gone out there and looked at it. There's that shopping center as you enter Los Osos, and I lived in Los Osos long ago. And someone approved that project who never drove into Los Osos and enjoyed that view of the bay because it's completely blocked. They could have done something different with architecture. No one looked at that. So I wanted to go out and look at this piece of property. We walked all over it, and I noticed the trees and that the kids are using it for skateboarding and the old building, and walked all around it. And it has lovely views in parts of it. And I really want to affirm the idea that land is much, much more valuable than the money it ever could generate, ever, in a 99-year lease or however long. And I totally agree with Chief Seattle that, you know, at the end of living, there is the beginning of survival when everything is too populated and too built up, and we're just thinking about how to, you know, own it and take advantage of it in some way. I think that if I were just imagining a project for that, I would have something sort of like Rancho El Choro, where the kids could go out there and sort of a conference center where kids could stay and visit the beach and be outdoors and still have some open space. Because once you start building 14 units, you're going to block a lot of views from different perspectives. And rent it out. You know, who wants to come to Avila and rent a conference center and generate some money that way without building it just for this? Those are some of my observations. I see that the community is not happy, and the people that have expressed, I haven't heard anyone come forward from the community, but maybe they're not representing everyone, like Patty says. I see a really fat binder trying to make it all foolproof because it's somewhat complex and a little messy. So those are just my observations as a new person.
Yes, I move that we go forward with this and direct staff to execute the lease.
Okay, moved by Mrs. Andreen, seconded by Mr. Unger. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Go ahead. Vote no. Let's go.
Okay, so we have five in favor and Mrs. Dickinson opposed. Okay, item six, budget revisions, 2005-2006 budget revisions. Do you have it, Russell, or Mrs. Hunter?
As a requirement of state law, the education code mandates that we revise our budgets within 45 days of the passage of the state budget. In response to that, we have incorporated the main change within the state budget, which we had adopted in our budget, and now we correct in accordance with the state budget. And that, in particular, was the 2% increased cost of STIRS that the state had proposed it was going to assess districts. And then at the end of the budget negotiation process, it withdrew that piece, and the STIRS cost remained the same, 8.25% of salaries, as opposed to 10.25% that we'd built in our budget. The savings that that represents is about $580,000, and we have incorporated that in our revised budget. Found on page 6.2, you will see two budgets, the projected budget, which is really your adopted budget from May of last of 2005, and then the projected revised budget. You will notice about one-third of the way down the net increase-decrease in fund balance. It goes from a negative $298,000 to a positive $280,000. And I will remind the board that this budget has Tier 1 included in it, and we have, by incorporating the Tier 1 expenditures and the 2% increase, we now have avoided deficit spending in our budget.
Move adoption of the revised budget.
Second. Oh, Mr. Unger.
Sure. I'm just really either way, I'm really happy about this. It's always nice to see revenues or to see less expenses. One of the things that caught my eye was that there was a retraction of the proposal to shift mental health costs to education from the counties. And that will help us significantly, and I hope that it helps students as well, because we do have students who need mental health services, and that would have been a...
That passes unanimously. Now we have the action consent agenda. Please let me know if there's anything you'd like pulled. Item 7, approval of additional modified secondary courses for 2005-2006. Approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Approval of student teaching agreement with Chapman University. Disposition of surplus property. Item 11, approval of furniture and equipment requests. Item 12, approval of purchase orders. Item 13, approval of extended field trip. Item 14, award of bid number 0198, bread and bakery products.
Approval of items 7, 9 through 12, and 14.
Second.
Okay. Nicely done. Moved by Mr. Unger, seconded by Mrs. Andreen. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, Mr. Unger, item 8.
I just want to state that I feel as if I need to abstain from voting on item number 8. My wife is specifically mentioned in this item.
Thank you.
Okay, then
move
I...
Approval of item 8.
And second. So moved by Mr. Millar and seconded by myself. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay, so it passes with one abstention. 5 in favor and 1 abstention. And then, Chris, you also pulled item 13?
I did, and I just wanted to congratulate Lindsay Ayotte, who was our Morro Bay High School board representative for about a year and a half. She is the ASB president at Morro Bay High School. And I want to congratulate her, and I want to congratulate all the student leaders at Morro Bay High School, and I wish them well on their extended field trip. And I would move approval of item number 13.
And I'll, okay, moved by Mr. Unger, seconded by Mrs. Andreen. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So that passes unanimously. The advance agenda.
I just wanted to mention, Madam Chair, if I may.
Yes.
I just want to mention I gave Kim the article I mentioned to you guys earlier about job shadowing, and you'll be getting in the mail. It was in the Trib recently, and it supports very much something I think that we want to look at. Thank you.
And then did you have a comment, Mrs. Dickinson?
I just remember that last week we approved a bid from Coca-Cola for the food for our students at school. And just in light of, you know, all those demonstrations in India where Coca-Cola is taking all their groundwater to produce soft drinks, I don't know if we want to reconsider or not, but maybe not. But I just think it's interesting that I think we should think about it. And if you want to know the truth, I think it would be awesome if high school and junior high kids did research on it and came forward with a recommendation to the board whether or not they thought we should honor a bid with Coca-Cola or have a, you know, a contract with Coca-Cola or not. I think that would be interesting.
It'd be interesting prospectively. If there's been a contract let to Coca-Cola, I don't know that we could get out of it at this point, but it'd be interesting for the
Joel, study session on technology and computer literacy.
Okay, I'll second that.
Just to clarify, by technology, you mean in the curriculum?
Yes, technology, okay. not computers, but technology in the curriculum and how it's you, what we're teaching our students and what should technology curriculum look like for children in the year 2005 and beyond.
And what we're considering basic computer literacy to be.
Yes, and I would use this as a starting point for discussions.
Excellent. I'll support that. Dr. Valentine, you got it?
I got it. I are you to reports yet, or you're still on advanced agenda?
Oh, wait. Well,
we're on advanced agenda.
We're looking forward to the technology report, by the way.
Okay, reports by board members and district administrators, of which you are one.
I just thank you. I just wanted to bring to the board's attention, I'm sure you probably saw it, though, but it was an editorial in today's Tribune that featured Diana Barnhart, San Luis Coastal teacher at Los Osos Middle School, who has been selected, and I think we've announced it earlier, as County Teacher of the Year, and will go forward as the county candidate for the State Teacher of the Year Award. But I thought it was a great article, and it'd be nice to highlight it.
She is a fabulous teacher. And I work at the hardware store, and she was in a month ago, couldn't wait for school to start, planning projects, buying supplies. I just can't speak highly enough of Diana Barnhart, and I'm so glad that other people are acknowledging and recognizing her tremendous talents. Mrs. Andreen.
I just wondered if everyone has seen that the first state has sued
Connecticut.
To make the government pay for the unfunded mandate of No Child Left Behind. Either leave us alone or pay us to do what you tell us we have to do. So I guess other states are going to be looking at joining that. But I think we've all been waiting to see who was going to be the first to get there to challenge that. And it's good that that day has arrived.
And if I might add, I believe that Utah is in pretty much open revolt against No Child Left Behind and has said they're not going to do it.
Interesting. Mrs. Botwin.
Doesn't mean they're leaving children behind. Where are we now? Reports of board members? Okay. I just wanted to make sure. I wanted to support. I had Diana Barnhart's name down here, Ed, that you already mentioned, one of our outstanding teachers. And I also had another outstanding teacher here. You probably saw her picture in the paper yesterday in the Trib. They were acknowledging Mila Vujanovic Labar.
Hoyovich.
Thank you. One of the leaders of the marketplace opposition, and there was quite an article in here in some discussion back and forth. And I have to comment that Romero one time was in our neighborhood, and some of the comments he made in here were very like a comment he made about our neighborhood. His comment about our neighborhood was that
Why don't they cut all those trees down? They have no leaves. They're dead. Mm-hmm. See, Jeff Edwards has gone, and I'm sorry. I had hoped he'd be here and I could direct this right to him. He embarrassed me. He embarrassed others. His behavior, what he's doing out there, trying to make Sunnyside look like it's pretty much in the bag that he's going to buy it, and et cetera, et cetera, and the other problems that he had. And what I did was I ran into somebody the other day, and I wanted to ask the board members if you'd mind. This the name of this booklet that I got from a friend of mine is called The Real Property Advisory Committee 2005 for Lucia Marr School District. And in it is a marvelous setup of all kinds of information. The board members, the ed code is in there. The board members are picked according to ed code and 7 to 11 members, and the one that's the most pertinent member is persons with expertise in environmental assessment, building codes, zoning, and so on and so forth. I had hoped I would give this to Ed, we'd look it over and discuss it. We're still running Sunnyside. There's no intention. We've not changed our mind about selling it. But before we ever get to that point, I would like to have us, as Steve had in place, community members, and it was wonderful. We all liked it. We loved the committee. There were some great people on it. If we could get together a real property advisory committee, get them in place and get this in. So when we get to the point about Sunnyside or Pacheco or any others, if it gets to the point that we consider selling, that we have something in place. We have information. We have ed codes. We have background. And it's not to us. We don't have to be embarrassed by behavior that went on at Sunnyside's, because I found that very... I found people, when they asked me that, I said, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. I'm very embarrassed about his situation. And they said things like, well, do something about it. I said, okay, I'll go out there and throw spitballs at him. But that's not really what they wanted. Okay, thank you. I'm sorry.
Can I make a point?
Excuse me. I'm in charge of the meeting while Ms. Rogers stepped out for a moment. So before I turn it over to you, I think Mrs. Botwin's idea is a good one. We should look at what they've done. We can always learn from folks. But I would not want the public to go away with the impression that when we did our leases and other things that we somehow did not comply with the ed code and the requirements of the 7-Eleven committee stuff. And I know you didn't mean that. But anyway, Mr. Miller?
In line with that comment, I just want to remind the board that we went through many meetings with public input about how we were going to utilize that property. It was called the 7-Eleven committee. As a result of the recommendations they made to you guys, you let the property out on leases of 3 years and 5 years, depending on what we could negotiate. And we have a long-term view based upon your direction that we will be leasing that property. When we lease to a master leasor, we have restrictions on what they can and can't do based upon the uses of that property. But it doesn't prohibit them from doing things that aren't prohibited. So we don't have total control over that property anymore.
No. Become dormant for a while. Now, can we do that same kind of thing with our 7-Eleven committee?
The board has every opportunity to reconvene any kind of committee that would look at how we use the property, but we don't have an ongoing 7-Eleven committee. 7-Eleven committee was formed for a very specific purpose. It served its purpose, and then it was disbanded. But should the board have concerns or wishes to re-examine how we made our decision and where we might want to go in the future, then you obviously can do that. That's not a problem.
Thank you.
Any other board member reports, Mr. Unger? Did you have your mic down moments ago? Ms. Dickinson? Okay. I knew it was a germane conversation, but I didn't want you to miss what Mrs. Botwin was going to say. I have been directed, if there's no further comments, for us to move into our study session, and Mrs. Roger is going to join us momentarily. And how do we want to do that? Do we want Dr. Valentine, you just want to kind of take the lead on this for me? Okay. Sure.
What is this on our desk?
It's a copy of the overheads.
Okay. not the newest.
No, this is the handout that you should have, and that's the old.
We got one in the mail.
Yeah.
This is the same as the one we sent in the mail. Is that what it was?
If we could take our places, please.
Madam Chair, I presume we're back in session.
Yes, we are.
And we can start. I know I was asked to pick it up because this was Walt Millar's birthday. And he has other plans, I'm sure, for the evening. So we're going to try to pick this up a little for you, Walt.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Walter. Happy birthday to you.
That was lovely, and you guys really sing. What a harmonious board. And you know the first item on closed agenda next meeting, don't you?
Yes. And a very happy birthday to you. That was almost pretty. Thanks.
Thank you all very much.
Can I give you the swats, Walter?
Just like always.
Well, anyway, Walt's birthday notwithstanding, I appreciate the opportunity to share with the board our work so far on the district strategic plan. Our goal is to develop a strategic plan that's more than a statement of vision and generalized act. Anyway, I did want to draw your attention to the back pages of your handout.
Would those be the blank pages?
Well, no. I'd like you to find the first pages of print, if you would.
Summer meetings are always unruly.
Yes. And how much longer of your birthday do we have?
Yeah, really. Not very much.
Anyway, on those back pages, we list ongoing projects, and I think they're important. The projects are important to the district. But they represent projects which did not rise to the level so far, anyway, of district-wide action areas. We list these for you, nevertheless, to affirm that wherever we land with respect to district-wide action areas, all the other business of the district and dedication to continuous improvement will continue, and so these projects will continue. Are we okay?
We're just checking because the pages were out of order in one
That's
of them.
Right.
And we may not all be working from the same document.
Right. Thank you. Yes, this was almost a giveaway line, so we're really going to kind of get into the substance of it in a minute. But the point of drawing your attention to the ongoing projects is simply to assure to you and to our community that wherever we land with respect to specific district-wide action areas, that the ongoing business of the district will continue to be ongoing business, and that the business of continuously improving that ongoing business will continue as well. So the decision to go in one direction in the strategic plan does not stop us moving in the other directions in the district. We've identified three action areas, district-wide action areas now, and these are no longer in those continuing projects, but on the board. We've identified at-risk and alternative education, education in the community, and system-wide communication. We stated the importance of real products in the plan, and the products represent the means by which we can measure progress, and each action has defined products, which we'll now discuss.
For action area number one, at risk and alternative education, we've defined three products associated with that area: an English Learner Academy, prescribed interventions for at-risk learners in specific categories of risk, and a clearly defined range of alternatives for attending school in San Luis Coastal from elementary through high school. For each of the products, we propose a clear and concise publication to the public regarding the opportunities available. In the case of the English Learner Academy, the concept is this: that no one has been in California for very long without identifying English acquisition as one of the biggest educational challenges for a significant portion of our student population. The lack of proficiency in English is one of the greatest academic risk factors that many of our students will ever face at any time in their proficiencies with English, transportation of students if necessary, not to mention instructional methodologies, can be daunting, but we believe the project is worthy of the school district. English learners, though precious and important, aren't the only at-risk students that we have. This has been shared with me over and over again in connection with the English Learner Academy proposal. We have students at risk due to learning disabilities, due to the need for acceleration, due to the need for family services and health services and food services, due to behavioral issues and attendance issues and substance abuse issues and learning styles. Products 2 and 3 call upon us to systematically define the needs of our students, to identify the remedies which are in place, and to build additional remedies. The key to these products is system, to lay them out all at one time in one place, to make sure we have properly identified the needs, to have collectively identified the resources, and to have systematically implemented the remedies, to identify what we have in place and where the gaps are relative to the needs of our students. Patty, did you have a question?
I do, thank you. Before we get too far along, when you're talking about an English language, English Learner Academy, it's almost an ongoing project, I would think, because we have Pacheco now, and I would assume that Pacheco is an English Learner Academy, but are you looking at an English, I mean, it's not going to be cast in stone, it may evolve, but are you looking at an English Learner Academy as something that would be in addition to Pacheco or supplant Pacheco, or just as an evolution of what we're doing there currently?
I see it in addition to Pacheco, not in place of Pacheco.
So it could be another whole school.
It a program. I don't see it as a school, of setting up a separate school for English language learners. I don't think that would be a good idea, and I wouldn't recommend it. But the concept is this, and that is that if we recognize that English acquisition is a major academic risk for our students, then in order to address that risk, that level of risk that our students have, then the acquisition of English in a rapid, deep kind of way is the best chance that our kids have for achieving success, and at least in a rapid kind of way in our system. So what the proposal is really contemplating, and again it would need to be fleshed out, but is really contemplating is bringing in folks who are skilled at teaching English to second language learners and providing time for those second language learners to meet with those instructional staff. Now, whether that occurs during the school day, whether it involves transportation of students for a period of the day, whether it occurs outside of the day or on a Saturday, whether it invites parents to be a part of the academy, those are the kinds of things that we really want to take to our community and say what kind of things would meet your needs best in that. And I could see the students at Pacheco participating in that equally, the English learners in Pacheco equally, and supplementing the program they have at Pacheco as well.
Okay, so just in terms of...
Try something concentrated. Kids all over the world learn foreign languages. Kids all over the world learn English. What are they doing and what can we learn from them? We also want to let, we're still in the area of at-risk and alternative education, we want to let our public know the remedies which are available in clear, concise, and user-friendly ways. The interventions that we're looking at, and we're beyond the English Learner Academy now to generalized interventions that are based upon specific risks that our students face. The interventions are academic, social, and behavioral, and we want to look at them all at once rather than as separate commodities and approach our students as whole human beings with interdependent needs and how best to coordinate services and what services would be best to coordinate. Let's jump quickly to action area number two, education in the community. The general concept of this whole area is that a school and a community is a much more powerful vehicle for education than just a school. We want to take students out to the community, and we want to bring the community into our schools. Our main and first emphasis proposed here, anyway, is in the area of college and career exploration. This was based upon input we received from virtually everyone we talked to. And there are four products associated with this. The first is a published set of standards which reflect and define our best thinking about what a student should know and be able to do with respect to identifying and pursuing college and career aspirations. It's a logical product if this is an area we wish to pursue. The second product is to rethink our college career centers in light of what we want to accomplish. The ability to go into Tier 2 of the budget will provide a career technician at both comprehensive high schools and invite a redesign and a rethinking of those services. The third product is actual student experiences with college career exploration. Examining both the opportunities which exist now and may not be well known to our public, and to create new ones. The last one is that communication piece. How well does our community know what is available and how to access these kinds of experiences for kids? Let's remove any doubts by publishing exactly what is available, how to access it, and put that communication directly into the hands of the people who want and need to know it. The final product area has been alluded to in the other two, that's systematic communication. The concept here is that people who know how to navigate a school system gain better access to their schools than those who don't. Through a communication campaign, we want all our constituencies to know how to derive greatest benefits from their schools and not to reserve those advantages just to the sophisticated few who have figured the system out. We want the system to figure the system out and tell everyone what the story is.
Wow.
The three proposed areas, remember we started with products and we're moving backwards to process, and the three proposed themes within those themes, student as a person and so forth, for people to respond to. But when we surveyed folks on the topics, some themes emerged. With respect to the student as a person, a number of themes emerged as shown, but they fell into two predictable categories: internal self-related qualities such as health, self-esteem, self-awareness, independent thought, and intellectual drive, and then into external or connective qualities such as tolerance, compassion, respect, responsibility, cooperation, community, and citizenship. When we queried about our dreams for the student as a student, we found that folks were concerned about attitudes towards learning and specific skills, but also outreach of experience, including community and strong parental support. When it came to the capabilities of the school and the district, one of the most powerful inputs, which came from virtually every group, was responsiveness to all students, with an emphasis on all. There was an implied concern that the overall achievement of the school district can sometimes mask that we still have struggling and unhappy and unsuccessful students, and we should rededicate ourselves to doing something about that. Community outreach was yet another theme. The input on communication was fairly simple: do a better job everywhere. It took the form of generalized needs such as we need to listen, to provide feedback, and to respond. It included also specific methods of communications: telephone, print, technology, verbal meetings, and so forth, to communicate the messages of our school district and to receive messages from our school district. And finally, even to include specific subjects such as news, successes, procedures, orientations, articulation, expectations, etc. Finally, when we raised the issue of functioning as a professional organization, a number of themes came forward. We see the repeat of themes appearing in the other categories, specifically responsiveness to students and involvement with the community and world of work. But perhaps the greatest volume of input in this area centered on the organization's openness to change, expressing a compelling vision in terms of mission of an organization that is willing to move forward. The board had an opportunity to participate in those discussions at our retreat, and at that time we suggested a menu of some 15 possible areas for attention. The board asked that staff look at those areas and develop a recommended prioritization of areas. We did that at a management retreat, and the results are summarized on page 2 of your handout, although the results we've kind of gone over. And you can see how the recommendations evolved. Please.
Thank you. How many people were involved in that process? How many people voted on that?
It was the entire management team. It's about 35, 40 people.
Thank you.
This would go much smoother if you'd understood what the horse meant when he moved his hoof, you know? Have been revised, by the way, based upon board input, and those revisions are indicated in italics in your handout. Dr. Matakovich pointed out that there's only one goal, and it's student achievement and well-being, and that all the other goals are merely assists to that goal. Nevertheless, we list them as adjuncts. One of the most important things, and again, moving back from the mission to the process, from the products to the process to the mission and the goals, one of the most important documents is our mission statement. We've noted that our mission I give up. Thank you. We've noted that our mission deals not with standards and courses, but with students who are a certain way and who can do certain things as we vision our dreams for our kids. As we look at the input we have received, if we look at the action areas we considered, if we look at the specific areas we prioritized, if we look at the products that we proposed, how do they align with our mission? As we read our mission statement, and you can do that as we speak, but certain phrases jump out. Self-sufficient individuals, wherever we land on that. Making contributions to society. Managing change. Culturally diverse world community. Highest quality programs. And full potential, physical, creative, emotional, social. Thank you. And thank you. No. Our proposal looks at the mission of self-sufficiency in the action area of at-risk and alternative education and proposes that our English learners have the ability to learn English, that our students in need receive coordinated, defined interventions, and that our students with different wants and needs have alternative pathways through school. Our proposal looks at the mission of managing change, making contributions to society, and cultural diversity through the vehicles of education in the community, through the English Learner Academy, and through the exploration of college and career aspirations. Our proposal looks at the mission of highest quality programs and full human potential through coordination of at-risk intervention, through language acquisition, through alternative pathways, and through communication that levels the playing field for all segments of our community to maximize access to their schools. These are the areas we have derived from the input we have received so far. My interest has been to begin meaningful work sooner rather than later. I don't see the planning process stopping here, since there are many long-range questions we want to propose and process and many more people we want to talk to. But this gets us going with real work.
Mrs. Andrine.
I think you're very close. I think it's fantastic to have pulled all those diverse thoughts together into something this basically concrete and workable. I was very impressed. The only things that I saw that I would comment on are in the mission under system-wide communication, Area 3, in the description of the overarching statement above the first product, it says a compendium of formal communications which assists our community in realizing the greatest advantage from their schools. I would like to see us capture somewhere also the idea that we provide opportunities for public participation in supporting and improving our work. Because I notice a lot of the communication and a lot of the direction and flow is from us out to the community. I want to encourage that flow back in the other direction where the public can participate and support. And I know that happens quite a bit, mostly at the younger levels, but I still have an interest, and it may overlap with the other goal in the career, mm-hmm. of involving more adults from the real world with the academic world.
Okay.
I would hate to see us just have it at one high school and not at the other.
That's a good. Okay. And there are resources at Pacific Beach, too.
That was going to be my question.
Thank you.
What will we be offering at Pacific Beach?
Pacific Beach has a library, and I couldn't tell you what the Pacific Beach would be a part of this. It just wasn't a part of the budget allocation for a career tech.
And Mr. Mullen, I wanted to say one more thing, if I could, on the strategic beliefs.
Yes.
I can't remember where you said they came from, but I think they're just really excellent. And I think the idea that it's hard work, it requires discipline to stay focused, and that maintenance of the status quo consumes most of the organization's time and energy. Those things are encouraging to me because those are sort of the real world restrictions on how much we can do. And by recognizing those things, I feel like this is going to be more useful than some of the kind of strategic planning and visioning that other organizations have engaged.
I don't really know where the goals of the board fit in to the overall picture. Sure, we talked about the mission statement, the goals and objectives, but there wasn't this this articulation of board goals and areas of emphasis that translated through. It was more we were given an assignment to go break down into all the nuts and bolts and figure out how we would implement it. And that's not to say that that process did a lot of good things. Launched our technology and a whole bunch of other stuff. I'm very pleased with this, and I think you have avoided the tendency to try to do too much, as Patty pointed out. And it's always harder to talk about strategic planning to really think of things in concrete terms. I mean, it was just paper and binders. And this really helps a lot. And I think part of it is that it's coming, percolating up, as well as being, let's say, shoved down. That's not right. Distributed down. My question about the process is how do the site SIP school improvement plans and PQRs and other processes that are supposed to identify how things are and what things we want to do better, how is that brought into this process?
Yeah, and your question is also sort of the answer. That first of all, we want to make sure that we're on the right track before we get too far down the road. But this will become a part of the conversations as principals set their goals. One of the things we really tried to do is to pick action areas that would complement and support school site councils and the real work of the school site plan. And we believe the kinds of proposals for at-risk kids, the kinds of proposals for English learners, the kinds of proposals for community and parent outreach, and for communication in general, are going to fit very tightly with the plans of specific school sites, and they're intended to do that. And I think that this is going to, have an effect on school site plans, and then school site plans are really going to have an effect on this.
I too want to say that I think this is a great process, and I'm excited about it, and I like the concrete things that we're going to work on. I have a question and some comments. You can only ask the question. In this document that we have, the potential goals revised per board retreat and some of these other things, is this wording going to be in some kind of published document, or is this like a working thing right here?
Yeah, I would like, convene on an agreement about what these are, to have them be in a published form, yes, as part of our communication plan.
Okay, and make just a few little responses to just a little bit of wording. On page one, potential goals revised for board retreat. Student achievement and well-being. Number three, continues to clarify what is important for that student to know and be able to do. I think that's good. I just want to exploration, I mean, not too like closed in. So
right.
Some sort of expansive kind of ongoing thing. So and that's just quick. Partnerships to develop community confidence through active outreach, transparent processes, open communication, and meaningful partnerships, and move out and support for shared communal values, because it's undefined. And you know, when you start talking about values, you know, there's differences and things, and I think that it's covered by the partnerships and the transparent processes, just to make sure that we're still, you know, having cultural diversity as part of it, and just to kind of just, I think you could get that by just leaving that phrase out. And I don't think it would hurt you anymore. It would still be open to everybody's values, and I know there's some that we all share, and that's kind of obvious, but still,
yeah.
We don't want to make people feel like on the outside instead of the inside. And then on governance, I like a phrase to start with, to encourage a sense of community. I think that would be a nice addition to the, because we did talk about that, how it's like working as a family at all levels.
Thank you.
I thought that the added on thing, a method of oversight and accountability, is somewhat redundant since you just talked about an operational set of policies and procedures. But that doesn't matter that much, just a little redundant to me. And over on strategic beliefs, which is on page 3, all effective planning begins and ends with the student in mind. And of course, I would want to add in the student's context, the student and the student's context in mind. And talking about the mission statement, number 3 and 4, it requires discipline to commit to something and resist committing to everything. And our mission statement does talk about guaranteeing intellectual, physical, creative, and emotional, and social, you know, reaching their potentials in these areas. The number 4 is a realistic plan. I just think that the realistic part is realistic, and those are, I love those goals of the whole student, but it just, in a way, supports
putting the word seeks rather than guarantees in the mission statement.
We'll bring that back.
We'll bring that back.
For revision.
I'd love to number six. Maintenance of the status quo consumes most of the organization's time and energy. That's true, we fight that all the time in public education. I think that's a really true statement. And number seven, it says without answering the question, why change? And I just wanted to bring up, without asking the question, why change? Just encourage asking questions. I love over on page four, the all the product about prescribed interventions for at-risk learners. I thought that was great. I wanted to add one thing on product three, clearly defined range of alternatives for attending school. A last bullet there that would be develop an extensive internship program and opportunities for increased community involvement. So I looked through, I didn't see that really in there yet. And last thing, page five, under product two, a college career center, develop college career center with materials, resources, and community. It says contacts. I like the word venues, community venues to support students' college, which implies they're going to be, the kids are going to be out there. Instead of just, you know, we know someone's phone number or whatever.
Can you draw me to where
it's at page five.
Yes.
Product two.
Thank you.
Develop a college career center with materials, resources, and
write booklet. System wide communication area three mission. Under one product, you have a Roman number one. Mm-hmm. Then under that, you have a product one. That when you redo this, you never have a one without a two. So make
thank
that grammatical.
You.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
If it's going to go public, otherwise we can just make fun of you.
And
you can take the English teacher out of the school, right. But you can't take.
Well, Ed, we charged you with a mission to come up with a strategic plan, and I think that you've done an excellent job.
Thank you.
It's excellent.
Great.
And ambitious, and I really like the three areas that you've chosen to focus on initially.
Good. So
you're going to make a new copy?
Yeah, I'm going to change the Roman numeral.
Okay. Yes, you better. And then, so we don't need to take one of these home.
So do I have no Roman numeral since there's only one thing?
You either have always more than one or none.
None.
Just
that's
a paragraph.
There's only one.
So
one more thing.
Yes, Mr. Unger.
I'm just going to tag onto what Marilyn said. And just one more thing I like about it is that it's continuous with what we working on. It doesn't feel like an abrupt change. It evolves well from what our previous goals were that we stated a couple years ago.
Chris?
Yeah, I just would like to close with one of the things that we talked about in – and I don't believe I'm breaking any confidences, when we interviewed for superintendents was this notion of strategic planning. And this was something that you particularly highlighted, feeling that it was really an important aspect to a superintendency and to what the work of the district should be. And I want to compliment you on your movement toward that goal. So thank you very much. I don't know if other people have comments or not. If they don't, I'm going to play Dr. Olker and move to adjourn.
Second.
Thanks, everybody.
Happy birthday, Walter.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.